Get ready to find your recipe for success from America's top business owners here at Onward Nation with your host, Stephen Wessner.
Good morning, Onward Nation. I am Stephen Wessner. We all know that building and scaling a business is hard work. But when you have the right strategy, the right recipe for success to follow, the action steps become more like ingredients and can be added systematically into your business, one ingredient at a time. And that's why I am so excited to introduce our guest today, Don Yeager. Don Yeager is a nationally acclaimed inspirational speaker, longtime associate editor of Sports Illustrated, an author of 24 books, eight of which became New York Times bestsellers, and is one of today's leading authorities on how to build a culture of greatness within companies and organizations. Don, welcome to Onward Nation.
Hey, thanks, Stephen. I appreciate you much.
Well, Don, I've only given Onward Nation a very brief glimpse into your background. So take a minute and tell us more about your business and your experience, and then we'll dive right in.
Sure. So I was a longtime reporter, a journalist, and I spent most of my career, 25 years of it, asking questions of other people, trying to drive from them lessons learned, habits formed. What's their recipe for success? And then 6 years ago, while associate editor of Sports Illustrated, they offered all of us who'd been there 10 years or more an opportunity to take a buyout, and it was the perfect time for me to kind of move into a new piece of life, a new strategy, and that for me was continue to tell stories, but just doing it a different way, and then continue to write books. So I do at least one book a year, and then I do between 60 and 80 speeches a year, and now I do several dozen webinars every year as well for companies that use me in an ongoing fashion to kind of maintain a role as part of their corporate growth.
This is going to be so awesome. I can't even wait to begin the conversation. My mind is already spinning with dozens of questions to ask you, but I'll try to keep to the ones that I shared with you in advance. But so let's dive in. I like to call this first section focus and preparation. And preparation, because it's so true that greatness is available to all of us if we're willing to do the common things uncommonly well. And I'm sure that
you're
quote
stealing
sounds...
my stuff.
I was just going to say,
stealing my stuff.
I'm sure that sounds really familiar to you because it's something that you said and taught to me, and I never forgot it. So the question then for you is there a secret or time saving technique that you can share with us that helps you focus and prepare to tackle your most vital priorities each day?
Sure. And I'm going to bet that as you ask all of your guests for this podcast that question, one of the things that you will discover is that most of their answers will, like mine, come back and be a common thing. They just do it uncommonly well, right? There's no secret sauce in the way that some might want it. I'll give you this recipe, and only you if you listen right here and you will ever have it. The truth is that what you'll learn is that the great ones do the common things uncommonly well. And so for me, my common thing, my time saving, my technique that I think has been a real driver in my success is my ability to delegate. And bigger than that, it's my capacity to trust others, with what I delegate them to do. One of the challenges I think with a lot of business owners, a lot of entrepreneurs, especially, is that, they have something that they're offering to the world that they believe that they've got a special gift for, and that's awesome. We should believe that. And sometimes they are so convinced of it that they don't believe anybody else, even somebody in their own organization, can deliver that in the same way. And so they they delegate, but then they micromanage, and that defeats the value of delegating. I have an amazing team of people that work for me, many of them have the capacity to write emails as if they're me. And so there's some times out there where I'm on the road and I'll just give a quick call and I'll say, hey, look, send an email to so-and-so. And it, for all the world, it looks like I'm sending emails while I'm traveling and doing these different things. And it's that ability to kind of have, to be able to kind of spread my wings and have other people helping me, make it look like I'm in 50 places at one time. And that's really valuable for me. That's my very common thing, but I have so many of the right people around me that I can trust them, to carry it off.
Well, and before we move on to the next question, let's take that, a bit deeper here to add some additional context. So not only are you running this amazing, you know, speaking business that you mentioned in your introduction and writing best-selling books on the New York Times and so forth, but you're also, you also have a PR firm. You also have a consulting, I don't know if it's appropriate to say lobbying firm, but you are actually running three different businesses. And so this entire team stretches across multiple companies, right?
That's correct. And our, you know, and I often say that our one consistency is that as a collective group, we are great storytellers, right? The political team kind of is in the storytelling business of sharing the story of their clients, right? The you would say the same for the PR, for our PR team. And then obviously as a writer, that's what I do. My writing team helps me in the storytelling, and as a speaker, that's what I do. And so yeah, we're a storytelling organization, and there's 18 of us, and we have but as a team, we're collectively we trust each other, and that allows for delegation to happen at multiple levels.
So let's stay on the theme of preparation just for one more question. So what would you say, you know, one of your daily habits that you strongly believe contributes to your success?
I love that question. And as I was thinking through it, I thought, you know, one thing I'm really big on is that before the world gets in my head every morning, I try to read something positive, whether it's a quote or a phrase, or whether it's just, you know, if it's something that I saw come in the night before and I saved it to read the next morning. I try to give myself a little nugget of nutrition, right? Just something that I can hold on to that will give me a chance to frame myself properly before the world gets a chance to change that frame.
Boy, isn't that the truth? I mean, what you put in into your brain, into your kind of nervous system, if you will, before you go to bed, you know, that's going to stay with you all night. I learned way back when I was in high school, my senior math teacher told me, like, if you're struggling on a math problem, at first I thought this was just hocus pocus until I did it one night and found out that it was actually true. He's like, sit down with a struggling math problem, think about it. If you can't figure it out, let that be the last thing that you sort of perseverate over before you go to bed. Then go to bed, and honest to goodness, when you wake up in the morning, you'll have a clear mind, you'll be able to figure it out. And again, I thought it was just like hocus pocus, and I did it one night, and sure enough, there it was. So your brain subconsciously processes all of these things. So, you know, Onward Nation, put something positive into your brain before you go to sleep. And just like, you know, Donna's suggesting here, it's awesome. So when you're thinking, when you wake up, think of something positive and focus on that, this piece of nutrition.
Yeah, I got so into the pursuit of great quotes. I was saving them for years, just, you know, moments of, you know, of genius that can be broken down by a quote, and that I had this collection of them that was so broad that about 4 years ago, we started sharing them every day, and we have a little a morning daily dose of greatness that goes out. And now I think there's about 20,000 people that get these quotes every morning from me, 8 a.m. every day. But they're not my quotes. They're quotes from people that have inspired me. And so literally the collection, or the process of actually doing exactly what we're talking about here, you know, by extension, now I'm trying to figure out how to share it with other people.
And I read it every day, so I'm grateful that you send those. And anybody who's listening can go to donyeager.com and subscribe to that too. It is awesome. So just vouching from personal experience. But so let's transition over to overcoming obstacles. Everyone loves stories. We talked about that. You're a storytelling organization. It's truly part of our human DNA. So tell us about a challenging time or situation that could have devastated or maybe even ruined your business, but you persisted, you made the tough decisions, and now that once painful memory serves as an invaluable learning experience. Tell us that story.
Sure. I would tell you it, you know, like a lot of small business people, this one's really negative, and many of us have gone through it. When I shared what had happened, the number of people who wrote me back and shared things with me was pretty powerful. But a little over 3 years ago, we discovered that our office manager, one of our most trusted employees, I mean, a great friend, literally one of my wife's closest friends, and so she wasn't just, you know, my right hand and executive assistant at work, but she was a close family friend, was stealing from us. And, you know, you take that moment and suddenly this, the betrayal, the hurt, the pain. And then when you ultimately discover it's upwards of $300,000. And, you know, when you figure all this out, and when catching her, we discovered the number of bills, including, you know, payroll taxes, things like that, that she had not been paying while siphoning money off to do incredible things for herself and her. It was crippling. It was near crippling. Literally, the decisions that we had to make were really tough. But one of the things that really stood out was almost immediately, I mean, we're a very transparent organization. So the second we discovered it, obviously, we escorted her out of the building. But I gathered everyone and, you know, tears in my eyes, I told them what had happened or what we knew. And at the time we knew nothing compared to what we ultimately discovered. And several of my employees pulled me aside and said, if you can't make payroll this month, I'm cool. Like I know you're good for it. Right. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Right. That's when, you know, the culture you've created is what you would hope for. And good fortune is that, you know, we made payroll and it was a struggle. And my wife, who works in one of the businesses, became, you know, suddenly, you know, hyper-focused on every dollar that came in and every dollar we were spending. And when she did that, it's amazing how 3 years later, the woman that we're talking about is sitting in federal prison and our business is in completely different. And that was a tough choice too, right? You're putting a former friend, even, you know, it's tough, right? But beyond that, there's an embarrassment factor, right? That you're going to admit to the world that somebody could steal from you like that. But we made the choice that it was the right thing to do. And that if we didn't, you know, that some future business owner could be stuck in the same place we are. And from the very same person, and we wanted to change that. Anyway, very tough moment, but it, our business today is rocking, it's rolling, it's, you know, it's amazing what happens when somebody's not stealing from you. But beyond that, it was amazing what happened in that moment in our conversation with our own employees.
Oh my gosh. And so for anybody who's listening, you know, right now, you know, is hearing that story, like what can they do to make sure that they learn from what happened in your situation so that doesn't happen to them? What could they do?
Well, certainly one of the things you need to do is realize that it doesn't matter how close someone is, and how perfectly intentioned, you know, you think everyone is. And I'm that guy, right? You start, when you walk in my door, you start at the top of the ladder. You got to work your way down as opposed to work your way up, which is what some people are. And but I, you know, obviously you have to realize that even the best people make bad decisions, and sometimes those decisions continue. It's your job to govern every dollar that comes in. It's your job. And I was so trusting. So, you know, some of the very things I said are strength became my Achilles heel. And so I would make sure that you've put the proper checks and balances in order, and I did not have those, and that's a great weakness. A lot of small businesses are that way.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. That was powerful. So let's switch gears over to personal mastery. So what would you say is the most critical skill you think business owners need to master in order to thrive today?
So for me, it's empathy for others. I think there's two pieces to this. Number one, I'm a big believer, John Wooden, who I quote often, a great basketball coach at UCLA, with whom I had a wonderful relationship. Coach Wooden used to say, "You can't lead people you don't know." And if you want to, and once you get to know them, you know, those with a true human spirit, a kind of a leader's spirit, have the ability to show empathy to other people and to understand what they're going through and what they're faced with, and to try to work with them. And I think that's a leader's gift that's one of those things that someone you should always be working on, is to make sure that you're thinking of other people's situation and not just our own. And that's one of those places that I do it every day, right? We're contemplating challenges with employees and everything else, right? What are they going through, and what would I be feeling if I was going through that right now too?
Which reminds me of today's quote that you sent out in the Daily Dose of Greatness. And I know I won't get this verbatim, so forgive me, but the quote was, "I don't really like that person. I need to get to know him better," which is from Abraham Lincoln, which is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's, again, you can't lead people you don't know.
Well, Don, this transitions great into the next question. And you have been an amazing mentor to me over the years. And I have learned vicariously, of course, from John Wooden through you. So the lessons that we need to learn as business owners can sometimes seem overwhelming. But sometimes a mentor can step in and help us see a situation from a completely different perspective, or even help accelerate or compress our learning into a shorter period of time. And I know you had this amazing relationship with Coach Wooden that stretched over, I believe, 12 years, if memory serves me correctly. So what was the most influential lesson that you ever learned from any of your mentors, and how it helped you become the business owner you are today?
Well, again, gosh, all these themes kind of seem to run back together and run, but that's, I guess, the way that's, you know, if you're talking to people, that's probably what you're going to find. Coach Wooden used to say, "You will never outperform your inner circle." If you want to know what your capacity for success is, your capacity for greatness, look at the people who are around you, the people who you have in your personal life and your professional life, because you'll never outperform them. And so for me, that's probably been the greatest lesson. I've made personnel decisions in my company based on thinking about this. You know, are they the kind of people, are they going where I'm going, right? Are they may be profitable for me as a business owner. I had one employee in our consulting business who was incredible. She could drive business, create new clients, do things, but was a cancer in the organization, right? Now, so from the profit and loss side, you're going, gosh, I love her, right? She's never looked better than she looks right now. But the truth is that I knew what she was doing to the rest of the team. And so it was a tough choice, but I knew I wasn't going to outperform my circle if she was still in it. And so I let her go. And, you know, tough choice, but corporately, better as a result.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay. So just to wrap up this first section of the conversation here. Onward Nation, I mean, Don has given us some really powerful lessons, things about delegation and trust, but then still having the checks and balances in place, doing those common things uncommonly well. That's what leads to greatness. Having a mentor that you can really trust and to be able to learn from, and then making sure that you pay attention to the people who are in your inner circle, because you're never going to outperform your inner circle that he learned from Coach Wooden. And I believe that Coach even called that, wasn't it like the power of five? Or
he had an exercise he gave me at the end of this conversation, in which he took a sheet of paper and he drew two lines on it. And in the first column, right on one side of one line, he said, you know, that's your personal life. In the middle column, it was your professional life. And the third column was your some other social circle, whether it's church or Kiwanis or whatever it might be, you know, some other social arrangement you might have. And then he asked me to go back to my hotel that night and list out in each column the five people I spend my most time with, who I communicate with the most in each one of those circles, right? Personal, professional, social. And then he said, tonight, as you look at that list, this is your inner circle, right? That's who your circle is who you spend your time with. And as you look at that circle, if they're not going where you're going, you need to strike them from the list and start a new five. And it's a big lesson.
It is a big lesson. Don, these have been some amazing takeaways. Onward Nation, I hope you're taking some notes and capturing this, and then go back and re-listen to the episode too to fill in your notes. But we are not done yet. So we finished the first round, and now we're heading into the second round, or the final round. And this is what I like to call breaking down the recipe for success. And so, Don, I'm going to ask you four questions so you can help Onward Nation break down your recipe for success into those tactical ingredients that helped you along your path. So heads up, Onward Nation, I suspect the result outcomes here, they're going to be things that you can take and immediately apply in your business right away and make it more systematic and make it more predictable and make it more repeatable. So here we go. Four powerful questions, four great opportunities for Don to share his story and his experience. So Don, if there was a magic reset button as it relates to starting your business, what systems would you go back and put into place sooner rather than later, and why?
Sure. Several years ago, I began the study of great teams. I've always been fascinated by what allows high performers to do really well, but I wanted to know why do some teams perform better than others? And one of the things I learned was that the great teams have an intense focus on culture. They're more focused on their culture than they are on their product. They're more focused on their culture than they are on the plays they're going to run to sell their product, right? And so if you look at that and you think about that, then every great team should start with a culture document. You should be able to say, here's what we value. Here's what is valued and rewarded in our culture. And you'll find that in every great sports team that I've had a chance to study. So a couple of years ago, we took at our staff retreat, we actually created a culture document that said, here's what we value. Here's what we stand for. And if you can't be this, you shouldn't be here. And if we say, and by declaring it, right, by declaring our values, we also hold ourselves accountable to them, right, both as leaders and throughout the organization. If I had one thing I wish I could have done earlier, it would have been to go through the process of creating that document, because listing our key core values, the culture, the pieces of our culture that we find important, allowed us to, I mean, we now include that in our interview process. We're hiring a new employee, we give them a copy of that document, because it says, and it's a single page, not a document, but you know, we give it to them and we say, if we get it, like, we don't micromanage at our firm. If you need micromanagement, that doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means you don't fit here. So take a look at this. This is what we value. And if you're looking for something different, be honest with yourself. Spare us all and don't take this job, right? It's also just it's a awesome declaration of value, and I love it.
This is so incredibly valuable. Before we move on to the next question, because I want you to share the numbers. You had shared with me once before. You had done all of this research about really the financial ROI of culture and hiring, and you studied a lot of different companies and so forth. So I don't want to mess this up and say what the numbers are, because I'm sure I would get it wrong. So could you share that? Because I remember when you did, and that was like so powerful as to what the ROI of getting the culture right is.
Well, so I'd love to say I did the research. I actually there's an organization out of San Francisco called the Great Places to Work Foundation, and they are the research arm that creates for Fortune magazine their 100 best companies to work for. And if you look at those 100 best companies, one thing that they all have in common is this focus on culture. They're just like the best sports teams. They recognize that if we get the culture right, other things will flow. And if you study those 100 companies, one thing that happens is that they have doubled their competition in ROI against the Russell 6000 index, and they have half the employee turnover of their competitors. They have the most loyal customers, the most loyal employees, and why is that true? Because they are focused on culture, and there's no magic to it. But culture is a squishy sounding thing, but you have to believe that your investment in it and your attention to it will have great results. And I will tell you, as a small business that focuses heavily on culture, I would tell you that it does.
Well, I mean, you just cited two very powerful financial metrics that prove that it does. So, okay, let's press on to strategy and recipe. So what one strategy or recipe that if business owners and their teams could consistently apply every day would compound into big wins for them?
So for me, and again, this came from the study of great teams. Right? I'm fascinated by why are the San Antonio Spurs able to do what they're able to do? Why are the St. Louis Cardinals able to do what they're able to do? Why is it that certain organizations can consistently win, can consistently be in the championship hunt, and why do they have the results that others in their with the same access to talent and others? Why can they do what others can't? And one of the lessons that came from that was that the best teams, and we use this now, this is a real driver in our little company, is the best teams run the most efficient huddles, right? They run the most efficient meetings. That they recognize that a meeting is a strategic advantage when properly. But what are the principles of a great huddle, right? Great huddles start on time and they end on time. You don't call a 2 o'clock meeting and begin it at 2:08. Because if you begin all your meetings at 2:08, pretty soon people are going to start wondering it at 2:10, right? You got to start at 2 o'clock, and if you are disciplined enough to begin your meetings, your huddles at the right times, people will be disciplined enough to show up and be there. You have to have a purpose for every huddle, right? We're not there together, and then the purpose needs to be stated up front, right? It's 3rd and 4. Our goal is to gain 4.1 yards, right? That's why we're gathered here together. We're gonna create a strategy around gaining that 4.1 yards, and then at the end of the huddle, there's a discussion to make sure that everybody understands what's expected of them as we walk out. If you can apply the habits of great huddles to what you're doing in your meetings with your team, you will find, as great teams do, that you do create strategic advantages. You are out of those huddles faster than other people, and while you're out creating business, your opponents are still sitting in a huddle someplace. So I think for me, when I think of one strategy that's been really valuable that I would pass on to any business owner, it's the principle of building great huddles.
Boy, I love that. The habit of great huddles. That is awesome. Wow. Whew. Okay. So let's fast forward 1 year. And you're looking back on the hiring decisions you're considering making now. And imagine the people you hire today exceeded your highest expectations. So what recipe or strategy did they consistently apply that delivered the most value to your business?
See, all this stuff's going to sound so squishy. And it's funny because, again, I'm going to bet that a lot of your other interviews are much more numerically driven or whatever it would be. But I will tell you that to me, when I read that question, I thought about what would be the strategy that my employees would apply consistently that delivered the most value to our business. And to me, the strategy would be that they cared about each other. You know, that I really do believe that if you create an atmosphere where people care about each other and they know what's happening in each other's lives, it's the empathy factor. It's all that we talked about, right? When you create that environment and you focus on each other, what you find is at the end of the day, that flows to your customers, right? They get it. They know that they are talking to somebody who cares about where they work and somebody who, because you care about more, you care more about working at a place where the other people there care for you. So, if I could think of a strategy that would say we found the right employees and we hired right, it would be that at the end of the year that I've hired people that continue to care for each other.
That's awesome. Okay, Don, this is my last question for you. So imagine you're standing in front of a room of brand new business owners, people just like you when you were starting out, and they're battling their way through the fears and the worries, the doubts and the struggles to find their footing like we all do. So what are two or three strategies you'd recommend that they focus on to best ensure their success?
So number one would be, and you know, again, you're going to say I'm cheating because this is what I told you our business does every day, but to be a better storyteller. That one of the great weaknesses that I really do believe that he or she who tells the best story wins. Right, your ability to there's actually a book out there. I've got it sitting right across the room. I'm looking at the title. Whoever tells the best story wins. And that's true. There are principles of great storytelling, right? It's human nature. People follow. They people appreciate stories. They remember stories. They're attracted to stories. They're riveted by stories. And so he or she who can tell the best stories, who can express to other people, what it is that you stand for, what it is that you're trying to achieve, and why they need to be on board with you achieving that. And that's true for your employees, your customers, that person that can articulate that story and draw people in to make them want to be part of the journey. The art of storytelling has been lost in the world of 140 characters or less. Mm. And I work on it constantly. Those who grow as storytellers just plain run the best businesses. I'll tell you, you know, and every one of the great business leaders who are out there today, you study them. That's what they do well. Every great political leader today, you study them. That's what they do well, right? Be a great storyteller.
Wow. So let's just sum this up. Onward Nation, I hope that you're taking notes. Everything from being a great storyteller in a world of 140 characters, mentorship, outperforming your inner circle because you won't, doing the common things uncommonly well. The list goes on. Don packed this full of some really, really great takeaways. You know, oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Don. But before we go, let's close out today's discussion with any final advice that you want to share, anything that we might have missed. And then be sure to tell us the best way that we can connect with you.
Sure. The other thing too that I would offer is that constantly be when we talk about mentors, we talk about all these other things that every one of us as business leaders should have. Don't be stuck finding as business leaders or as people that you would call a mentor. Don't be stuck finding people just in your industry, right? If you spend too much time, I mean, there are some amazing lessons to be learned from people who have life experiences or who are driven to do something that's different than what we're doing. And so go out there and find other options to create mentors for yourself. And those mentors don't have to be people you get a chance to talk to or call. They can be people you can read about, study, and learn from.
And then tell us the best way that we can connect with you.
So you mentioned the website, donyeager.com, there's all the contact is there. And I'd be honored to be of help to any of those who are listening to you today.
Okay, Onward Nation, these, again, super valuable insights and strategies for building your business from Don today. But no matter how many notes you took or how often you re-listened to this episode, the key is you have to take action. And I know that sounds cliche. You've heard me say it before. But as I've learned nearly 20 years ago from the late Dr. Stephen Covey, author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, we are responsible for our own lives. We have the initiative and the responsibility to make things happen. Highly proactive people recognize that responsibility. So be proactive, Onward Nation. Be proactive and take action on the decades of incredible knowledge that Don Yeager just shared with you. And then use what you learned to accelerate your results. And hey, everybody, I mentioned donyeager.com. Don just did as well. But please be sure to go and pick up a copy of Don's latest book, which is The 2 Most Important Days of Your Life, which you can order at the2mostimportantdays.com. You can find that featured on donyeager.com if you happen to be there as well. And Don, I just want to thank you for sharing your extremely valuable time. I know that you have a very compressed schedule and all of your expertise with us today in teaching and sharing those recipes for success that we can put into practice in our businesses. Onward with gusto. Thank you so much, my friend.
You got it, brother.
This episode is complete, so head over to onwardnation.com for show notes and more food to fuel your ambition. Continue to find your recipe for success here at Onward Nation.